program you are about to hear, Bob's Slacktime Funhouse, is parody, satire, and comedy. Any reference to Bob, the Church of the Subgenus, religion, politics, or any other touchy subjects is intended only as humor and should cast no reflection on the high standards of WREK Atlanta, its staff, or that of Georgia Tech.
Tonight on Bob's Slacktime Funhouse, rather than try to whip Rudy Schwartz up that hill again, we celebrate the life and work of Ivor Cutler. According to the wiki, as all things are, Ivor Cutler, born 15th of January 1923, was a Scottish poet, songwriter, and humorist. Cutler was born in Glasgow into a middle-class Jewish family of Eastern European descent. He cited his childhood as the source of his artistic temperament, recalling a sense of displacement when his young brother was born. Without that, I would not have been so screwed up as I am, and therefore not as creative. He joined the Royal Air Force as a navigator in 1942, but was soon dismissed for dreaminess. He moved to London, where he was employed by the Inner London Education Authority to teach music, dance, drama, and poetry to 7 to 11-year-olds. Cutler's deeply held views on humanity meant he disliked corporal punishment, and, on leaving a teaching job he held in the 1950s, he cut up his belt and handed the pieces to the class. He became known for his regular performances on BBC Radio, and in particular his numerous sessions recorded for John Peel's influential radio program, and later for Andy Kershaw's program. He appeared in the Beatles' Magical Mystery Tour film in 1967, and on Neil Innes' television programs. Cutler also wrote books for children and adults and was a teacher at A.S. Neil's Summerhill School and for 30 years in inner-city schools in London. In live performances, Cutler would often accompany himself on a harmonium. Phyllis King appears on several of his records and for a number of years was a part of his concerts. She usually read small phrases, but also read a few short stories. The two starred in a BBC radio series, King Cutler, in which they performed their material jointly and singly. Cutler also collaborated with pianist Neil Ardley and singer Robert Wyatt. Many of Cutler's poems and songs involve conversations delivered as a monologue, and, in these, one party is often Cutler as a child. Cutler describes poverty and neglect from his parents with great stoicism. In particular, he focuses on acceptance and gratitude for the basic elements of life, nature, and love, which allows him to make points about mother love in particular. The humor develops from the child's curiosity and the playful or self-serving lies the parents tell him to get, for example, a chore done, or simply to stop the incessant questions. Cutler recited his poems in a gentle Scottish burr, and this, combined with the absurdity of the subject matter, is a mix that earned him a faithful cult following. Cutler was a member of the Noise Abatement Society and the Voluntary Euthanasia Society. He died on the 3rd of March, 2006, following his retirement from performing in 2004. And so, for the next hour, Ivor Cutler.
A bird was flying in the air. I rose to my feet and caught its bony leg between my finger and my thumb. It snapped my arm at the wrist. I hadn't on my specs and didn't realize it was an eagle. Eagle, bring back my hand. Bring back my hand that you snapped at the wrist. No, he chirped, I'm an eagle. Do you really expect a different reply? I said, no. All right, here's your stupid hand. My fledglings have all your LPs. They think you're cool. I said, thanks a lot, eagle. Tell the kids I'll put you in my next album.
Use a brick. Don't bend, Betty. Use a brick. I peeped over a wall and there was Betty, bent. Her friend handed her a brick. She stood up and used it. No need to bend any more. I raced home and used a brick, standing up straight. You'll never catch me without a brick anymore, even at sea.
Ivor Cutler is an acquired taste. Though it's probably true to say that before acquiring the taste, one needs to be born with a certain mental nonconformity or perversity. His unmistakable voice, often accompanied by a rather wheezy harmonium, became lodged in my brain 25 years ago, after hearing him on the Home Service. For years, one of my minor ambitions was to meet the voice, or rather its owner. When eventually we did meet, I found to my delight that the voice and the owner were a perfect match. Ivor Cutler has a slow, lugubrious face, lifted from a deadpan mould. His tired eyes dream. But he can smile, and does, and his face holds some unexpected secrets, like that mischievous gap between the two front teeth. Now into his 60s, Ivor Cutler's achievements have mounted up. He has a prestigious Pi Radio Award to his name, and 10 books, both for children and adults, numerous records, and even an appearance in one of the Beatles' films. Today he's to be found on the poetry reading circuits, where he's acknowledged by his intensely loyal followers to be something of a cult figure.
The first time I heard it, I thought, fantastic, a cult, wow. But I've since realised that in the business, cult figure means a failure, unable to reach the dizzy heights to which big stars belong.
Would you like to have been a big star?
Well, in a sense, I am a big star, in the sense that the kind of people that I see at performances, I feel very flattered that people such as that would come to concerts of mine. I think I made it my business to avoid the kind of audience whom I would have trouble with. Some chap invited me to do a Masonic dinner, and he said, there's a fiver in it for you. And I went along, and there were these dreadful people. You know, they hadn't a clue. They were wanting some comic, I think. And I thought, I must avoid doing things like that ever again. So I've never asked to appear at, say, Batley Working Men's Club, because I think I should have glasses thrown at me.
A few weeks ago, I went to the crowded upper room of a pub on London's Tottenham Court Road, where the poetry cooperative, Apples and Snakes, was holding an Ivor Cutler evening.
Lots of people had to get turned away tonight. It was about 60 or 70 people who couldn't get in. One of the collectives actually saw Ivor Cutler perform when he was about 10, and ever since then, he sort of said, we must have him perform at Apples and Snakes, because his impact is such that, you know, he still remembers him that time ago.
I'm 30 now, and I saw him when I was 8 in an evening of British Rubbish, and I can still remember 2 of his songs word for word, so he's always been one of my heroes all my life.
Can you explain, though, to somebody who doesn't understand Ivor Cutler, what it is about him?
No, I don't honestly think you can. I mean, if you say something like he's totally bizarre and strange and turns over everything you expect, that sounds like a cliche. I think you just got to go and see him.
Not many flies have feathers. Big mice have big teeth. I like sitting. The best thing about sitting is sitting down. When you are young, they say, sit up. That is stupid.
Normally, Ivor Cutler is accompanied to such events by his friend and fellow poet, Phyllis King, who is, both on and off stage, his foil and support.
It's not that he's making jokes and things like that. This isn't what one laughs at. I think it's just being him that gives amusement and fun. Perhaps the way he wonders what it's like to be something else, perhaps a stick of wood or a bee, and the way he sees the world and people in it is different and makes one see it differently as well.
I'm walking to a farm to grow wheat. I'm walking to a farm to grow wheat. The sky is blue,
The sun is yellow. I'm walking to a farm to grow wheat. The duck is white, the pond is grey. I'm walking to a farm to grow wheat. My plough is made of wood, the black earth is soft. I'm walking to a farm to grow wheat. The share is teak, the handle ash. My plough is made of wood, the black earth is soft. The duck is white, the pond is grey, the sky is blue, the sun is yellow. I'm walking to a farm to grow wheat. The sun is yellow to grow wheat. Yellow.
My mother knew what she was. "I am what I am," she shouted round the flat, flicking us with the floor cloth to make sure we understood. We, sitting on our potties, making intelligent noises and looking bewildered.
I'm sitting on the top of the world with my little black buzzer beside me. My bum is cold and my face is white, and I have a message for you. Da, da, da. It's very cold in the top of the world with my little black buzzer beside me. My bum is cold and my face is white. It's very, very cold up here. This is my message from the top of the world, from my little black buzzard beside me. My bum is cold and my face is white. This is my message to you. Damn, the battery's gone.
This song was inspired by Princess Berenice, a princess with a 6-inch gold chain between her ankles, who is to be found in Gustave Flaubert's Salammbô.
Okay, fine. I've a cuddler and bounce, bounce, bounce.
I'm going to watch my woman walking down the street with a bounce, bounce, bounce. I'm going to watch my woman walking down the street with a bounce, bounce, bounce. The woman is very, very jealous. They walk with their feet astray. My woman is wearing her foot cuffs. She keeps her feet together that way. I'm going to watch my woman walking down the street with a bounce, bounce, bounce. I'm going to watch my woman walking down the street with a bounce, bounce, bounce. The husband is very, very jealous. They know my woman is the finest in town. They know why she is wearing her foot cuffs, and the thought of it gets them down. I'm going to watch my woman walking down the street with a bounce, bounce, bounce. I'm going to watch my woman walking down the street with a bounce, bounce, bounce. Bounce, bounce, bounce. Bounce, bounce, bounce. Bounce, bounce.
Ivor Cutler is a poet, composer, songwriter, jazz piano teacher, cartoonist, and painter. Running through all his work is an artery of the absurd. In Who's Who, he's described as a humorist. Inspired initially not by any of the great comic writers of the English language, but by Kafka.
I first came across the castle and this marvellous thing of not being able to get anywhere. No matter how you try, there was always an unseen type of authority. Frustrating. I felt great empathy, I think, with this person. And I got very excited. I couldn't believe it. The humorists that I respect are all really very unhappy men, perhaps desperate men, who will laugh rather than sit down and feel sorry for themselves. And in this way, to be social and to allow other people who are going through it also to survive a little more happily. But to survive, one has to daydream a lot and to have one's attention elsewhere than on the reality of life.
Ivor Cutler comes from Glasgow, from a Jewish background, and a household which left an indelible mark. Much of his work is about the tyranny experienced by all children at the hands of adults.
I get very angry when I came to realise what I was, how I'd been among people who hadn't understood me. And every step in my development had somebody sneering or saying, no, or that's stupid, or why don't you do something decent? And I think my motivation all the time has been, I'll show you what I'm made of. But I don't think I was a sore thumb in my family. I think I was seen to be a sort of soft bloke who was an easy touch for going down to the shops to buy things, and of rather lesser value than my brothers, who were pretty smart. They're both doctors. I think if there was any misunderstanding or lack of sympathy on my parents' part, I think it would be partly because I thought I was daft. What I was doing was just rubbish. And partly that they had their own troubles. So I occasionally talk to them in heaven, but they're usually busy playing cards when I talk, so that each one passes me on to the other one. They don't have much to say then. By the way, you realise that this is not actually happening about my mum and dad in heaven. It's just a game that I play.
It's not just in his semi-autobiographical works that references to his childhood occur. Images of Glasgow in the 30s seem to pop up all over the place, songs included.
I saw my granny at the pictures, biting all the buttons off the seats and singing cock-a-doodle-doo. I threw my little yellow shoe, she started singing cock-a-doodle-doo, ba dum ba dum ba dum ba dum dum. I saw the cobbler in the shoe shop, mending lots of little leather shoes and singing cock-a-doodle-doo. I threw my little yellow shoe, he started singing cock-a-doodle-doo, ba dum ba dum ba dum ba dum dum. One, two, four.
Glasgow, Glasgow, where are you? 179 from Elgin. My big brother is a great storyteller. His best story is the one he told us when I was 4. His teacher had a pisher 50 yards long and was obliged to wrap it round his waist. One day, on his way home from school, he tripped, fell down a stank into the sewers, and was covered in cack and pish. That's the story. He managed to spin it out to maybe half a minute, plus screams of laughter. We made him repeat it several times, till our mother came in and told us to shut up and go to sleep. Today, his stories have become more sophisticated. He is too wise to try to repeat his early success. Glasgow, Glasgow, where are you? 76 from St. Andrews.
Mother and father stole a long look, one at another, and back again. Father had sparse camel's lashes, but black against pearl-white cheeks. Mother's were completely nondescript, by both our standards, yours and mine. We hushed and shooshed. The stone chat lay under a leaf. Weary old clouds crouched over trees and bushes. Air pushed irresistibly at our faces, pressed well-formed daffodil-like ears to our growing skulls. Then Father stooped and fetched up the Black Book. Oh, the Black Book! And we ran crouching and cowering to the far corner, breathing fast. The book was a foot and a half square, with a brass hasp, hinges and corner buffers, anointed with exquisite verdigris, intimately embedded under the heads of rivets and flush screws, and along the chasing. The binding was black moire. Father snapped the hasp, laid the book on the floor at the corner, and he and mother knelt there, running their hands over an intensely black, thick page, eyes shut tight to assist concentration. The room went so quiet, you could hear a weasel choking a sparrow on the pavement. Mother muttered to Father whenever she was ready for the next page. "There are eyes at the ends of their fingers," I whispered. "Pass it on." Father swiveled and peered at me with shiny eyes. "Stand on the table," he admonished. It was a vile, shameful punishment. I clambered onto the table and stood proudly, my head beetroot, while the family walked round, looking up my kilt and passing remarks. One of the little girls made a simple sketch. Grandpa asked Grandma, "Did he eat his porridge this morning?" Everybody giggled, though the other children admitted to not understanding what it meant later. It had just seemed funny at the time. Finally, I was let down and joined the others at the window to watch the sleet fall.
Cosmos, key of C.
You are the center of your little world, and I am of mine. Now and again we meet for tea, we're two of a kind. This is our universe, cups of tea. We have a beautiful cosmos. We have a beautiful cosmos. What do we talk of whenever we meet? Nothing at all. You sit with a sandwich,
I look at a roll. Sometimes I open my mouth, then shut it. We have a beautiful cosmos, you and me. We have a beautiful cosmos. You are the center of your little world, and I am of mine. Now and again we meet for tea, we're two of a kind. This is our universe, cups of tea. We have a beautiful cosmos, you and me. We have a beautiful cosmos.
When I was 15, the Rationalist Society came to Menard Road, and I was out in the street there, and I listened to what they had to say, and they said things like, religion's a lot of mumbo-jumbo. So I thought, well, I wonder. So I went and lay in bed and said nasty to God, and God didn't kill me. So I went to the minister, and I said, can you prove the existence of God? And he, the fool that he was, I mean, 15, you know what boys are like then, he said, no, I can't. So I said, thank you, and I walked out, and I never went back. But I don't care for that kind of way of explaining away the things that are not understood in life.
Ivor Cutler became a primary school teacher, of a rather unorthodox sort. He was in his mid-30s when he acquired the necessary confidence in himself and in his work as a humorist to allow the world to peep into his imagination. But to begin with, there was very little interest from Tin Pan Alley in his songs, so he decided to perform them himself. He then began selling cartoons to Private Eye and The Observer, and appearing in Review. In 1963, The Times wrote of his performance in An Evening of British Rubbish, "His weird personal humour is of a somewhat sinister cast. His gnomic songs at the portable harmonium, advising us to pickle our knees in cheeses, or describing a dowager who uses her profile to cut bread, were delivered with cool authority and flawless timing." But meanwhile, Ivor was still teaching. The Times radio critic, David Wade, had a son who was one of his pupils, albeit a somewhat reluctant one. David Wade.
On the mornings that it was Mr. Cutler's session, he practically had to be thrown out of the door. He burst into tears a number of times and went down the road to his school crying. And he said he hated it. We discovered afterwards that it was because he was made to stand up, along with all the others in front of the class, and perform, act out emotions that he didn't know he had. One example was that all the class were asked to come out, one after another, and insult Ivor Cutler as hard as they could. And he, and I think many others, because I've met a friend of his who was in the same position since, they found this very, very difficult to do. By the end of his year at that school, the Cutler class was one of the things he was looking forward to more than anything. I think it has possibly made it a bit easier for him to stand up and say his piece in public. I'm sure it must have done, because he must have overcome all sorts of hang-ups.
This one is requested by Mr. Kershaw of Leeds. How to Make a Friend. Do you find it difficult to make friends? I am. At least I was until I discovered how to do it. First of all, take a large bucket of whitewash, then stand by the window and look out. When you see someone approaching whom you would like to know, wait until he is directly below, then empty the bucket over his head. He will stop and look up and shout unspeakable language at you. You will then reply, "Do come upstairs and clean yourself up," and throw him down the key. He will pick up the key and enter your home, tramping whitewash into the carpet all the way up. You will say, come, have a bath. Light the geyser and start running the water. He will take his clothes off, and as he is taking them off, say, ah, you have a hole in your undervest. Let me mend it while you're having your bath. He will say, thank you, I'm very grateful for this. While he is in the bath, sit there talking to him, darning his vest. It doesn't matter what kind of thread you use, it is the deed which is important. I myself use cobbler's thread, because when he wears the vest and feels the cobbler's thread against his skin, it is a constant reminder to him of our friendship, and he thinks, I must phone this man again. When he is dry, hand him your best red silk dressing gown with the dragons. Then he can take his clothes, put them into the bath water and wash them, then hang them out of the window to dry. Say to him, come and sit with me and talk to me by the window while they are drying. Then you talk, enjoying one another's conversation. By this time, the clothes are dry. Fetch them in and he will don them, thanking you for the darn on his vest. As it is now lunch, you offer him a share of your dinner. After dinner, he says, well, I must really go now. And as you go downstairs, he notices with alarm the whitewash on the carpet and says, goodness, look what I have done to your carpet. And you say, no, no, I only rent a room here. It is the landlord's carpet. Then he says, we cannot let you get into bad odour with the landlord. Let us together clean this carpet. So you clean the carpet, and this makes you even closer friends. When you have cleaned the carpet, he says, well, I must really go now, but I shall come and see you again tomorrow, and we shall have another long talk. You have made a friend. When he has gone, go back to the window with another bucket of whitewash, where you can stand or sit, as is your wont, ready to make another friend.
This is a cowboy song. I'm a cowboy. My horse is dragging along, scraping its horny hoof, making a rut on the trail. The sun is shining above, smoky and yellow. Get out the cards, we'll have a little game. And the swamp bird roots, standing on a scabby leg, waiting for a jackfish. I'm a cowboy. I lost all my beans, I'm back on the trail. Got to make the lazy W by nightfall. Yee-hoo-hoo! Better have a shave, a cup of coffee too, while my horse chews the jackweed and shoes away the horse flies. I'm a cowboy, yee-hoo-hoo, yee! But not for much longer.
A car can go fast on a hill with no brakes and oil on the hub. It cannot stop, so it has a spill. Mum and Dad get a cut. See Bill bleed. Bleed, Bill, bleed. Kate, do not cry. If you do, Anne will be sad to see it, and Ted will fret. Phil, run to the phone for a nurse to make us well. I see nurse. Nurse, make us well. We are ill from a spill on the road as we took a spin. Dad has a cut on his lip. It hit the wheel as he drove fast.
Mum cut her cheek. See how it shines. Bill is dead. He lost his blood in the crash. Kate, Anne and Ted are sad for Bill. He was their chum. Phil will walk us home along the pavement to our house, 29 Redburn Avenue.
Ivor Cutler has now given up teaching. He lives alone in the upstairs flat of a terraced house in North London. He dresses according to a unique random method. Hat, jacket and trousers are selected individually to match mood and not each other. His mind and his interests today dwell on the absurdities of the human species, the arms race, the ecological destruction of the planet, and the possible nuclear holocaust. He describes himself as a medium. What he has to say is not created by him, but channeled through him.
Because I work so slowly, my ear is censoring the noise that the words make in relation to one another. And I think that's quite a good way of working. All it needs is one or two words, and it just flows very slowly from there, and you pull it out like unfangling wool. I don't think I've said anything original in my life, but I've possibly put two ordinary things together and produced something interesting, which was what made me at one time think I was a genius, because that's what genius is, getting to unrelated things like the kettle and the steam, you know what. But I think if I am a genius, I'm a genius in a very small way indeed. A stupid genius. Yeah, stupid genius, not bad.
I think very deeply. I'm a really good thinker. People don't bother me much. They can see I'm using my mind. Watch my conclusion.
A real man. When I was 12, I wanted to be a real man. An old man with a beard sitting at a table with a huge book full of wisdom. And what did society hold up to me for my admiration? A golfer. A boxer. A man who ran quickly. A soldier. A lawyer. A tycoon. A motorist, a pop star, a footballer. Into what kind of madhouse had I been born? And what have I become? A child, witlessly pouring out whatever enters my head. I am a madman, and people gather to watch me make a fool of myself. I am not a role model. This is my protection and my security. I still long for the table and the book, the smell of an old man and an old book, the afternoon light fading.
Nobody knows who I am, I think. Nobody knows what I am, I think. I guard my tongue, it's cliches, cliches all the time. Nobody knows. One day I looked at a flower, I saw it blink. One day I looked at a flower, I saw it wink. Then I knew I'd done wrong. Listen to my song. Ladies are lovely, and so are gentlemen. Gentlemen. Nobody knows where I am, I think. Nobody knows when I am, I think. I got my mind, it's emptiness, emptiness all the time. Nobody knows. One day I looked at my mother, I saw her blink. One day I looked at my mother, I saw her wink. Then I knew I'd done wrong, listen to my song. Ladies are lovely, and so are gentlemen. Gentlemen. I got no common sense, and neither has nobody else. I spread my brains out on the table and poke them about with a fork. So I got no common sense, and neither has nobody esso. I spread my brains out on the table and poke them about with a fork.
I walked into the bedroom, and there were 10 children standing quite still on the bed, hands and faces clean like Italian religious pictures. They rose slowly and went through the ceiling like organ pipes. Bless them, I thought, always up to something, and returned to my singer, where I was fixing some fresh lace to my violet strapless bra for a wedding I was going to the following Thursday.
Christ, are you finished with your small talk? Yes. Goodbye. Good morning, how are you? Shut up. Don't give me the big talk, give me the small talk. A million millionth of six. Oh, I love that small talk. Give me some more. Microscopes, microscopes. Oh, I love that small talk. Give me some more. No, I hate to talk the small talk. I love to talk the big talk. All right, go ahead. Cows, yaks and mammoths, max yammoths and cows, yaks, yows and camoths, cacks, yammoths and mows. Are you finished with your big talk? Yes. Hello.
A man, brought up on simple sounds and easy thoughts, woke one night with a nuance in his brain. Unable to deal with it, he spoke it to a business associate with whom he was sharing the room, and who dabbled in semantics for a hobby. "Are you ill or something, Harry?" he muttered, switching on the light. "Let me fetch you a glass of water." "It's all right. Just a nuance," whispered Harry. "Go back to sleep. I'll be all right in the morning."
David Wade, who knew Ivor Cutler as a teacher, has also listened to much of his output, radio plays, songs and poems, as a critic. What does he make of Ivor Cutler?
I'm always delighted by his extraordinary individuality, the slow delivery, the Scots accent that produces everything in the same old monotone, the sudden way in which his dialogue goes off at a tangent into some quite other area. I think all this is admirable. But I think he tends to be a little self-indulgent and a little whimsical. I find listening to him that there is the odd joke, the odd line, which is pushed too far. Funny, perhaps, to Ivor Cutler, and you rather get the impression from it that he is saying, "Look what an individual I am." I think he'll be remembered as a very interesting, and I'm inclined to say, small talent.
Ivor, though, has sufficient talent, given the right promotion and media hype, to become a star. He has far more talent than many who've made it. But stardom would probably destroy the very originality of the work, the product of his subtle and brittle psychological makeup. He's described himself as a small-time manic depressive. What does Phyllis King think?
The depressive mood, I think, is most difficult for him. Things that might give him pleasure give him none. He is, in a simple way, one could say he's fed up with what he sees, perhaps what he is. He may put on a false sort of bonhomie, but I think one sees through it quite quickly.
I believe he once said that ideally he would have been an egg.
He sometimes has described himself as an onion as well, and that I understand. Perhaps he means the completeness of an egg and the containment. What's going on in the head, I suppose, is a lot of fantasy.
But fantasy turns to nightmare in his mind when he contemplates power politics and the horrendous weapons the system sustains. So niggling and provoking the system is part of his life.
I think I've been a useful member of the human race. In particular, getting the backs up of authority. I think I've been very good at that. All through my life I've had people finding me, oh, that wee grain of sand that you find in an oyster. I'm one of these people, creating trouble wherever I go. And there are always people waiting and hoping and praying that somebody who creates trouble of the kind that I create will come along, and I get invited to places by teachers in art schools very often to come along and stir things up a bit. It comes over as though I'm really some sort of hellion, doesn't it? But it's not that, it's just shaking people up and they suddenly realize that their brains have been asleep.
Once I was a little boy, I had a rubber toy. Oi, 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 what a toy. I opened up its lips and spat in lots of pips. Now my toy is full of forest. Oi, 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 a forest for a toy. What a lovely toy for a very little boy. Once I was a little girl, my head was in a whirl. Aye, 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 I'm a girl. I climbed a slippy tree for all the boys to see, and they gasped at how clever I was. Aye, 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 I nearly touched the sky. What a lovely thing to do, to be so very high. When the forest grew too big, it burst out of my toy. Hee, 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 lucky me. I give it lots of light, but girls climb up at night. Now my forest is full of girls. Hee, 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 a girl on every tree. What a lovely sight for a little boy like me.
A high treat. The bats are sitting at the edge of the cave, watching the sun turn red. One tunes his fiddolina. It is almost an inch long, and its note is unheard. The whole Bat Symphony Orchestra would be unheard. Imagine them playing Brahms 4, and their audience coughing and shuffling their wings between the movements, and us just standing there feeling foolish, turning the pages of our miniature scores, and the bats sensing our helplessness, sniggering in a friendly way. I have heard of pregnant women attending these concerts in the early weeks to give their fetus a treat.
From a man who values human life so highly, and who cherishes life on earth in all its forms, there's one final surprise. His own life he dismisses cheaply, and has often considered suicide.
Och, I've made a hobby of it. I've thought about suicide. Oh, I'm... You know, it's a good friend to me. I don't think about it so much now. I'm a life member of Exit. I'm a member of Exit until I die, I suppose. I'm over 50. I've had my life, so it doesn't matter as much as to those people who haven't had a real shot at life doing all the things that one would like to do. Because I think I've done most of them.
What's left to do?
To do? Trying to find out perhaps a little enlightenment about myself and what's around me. And learning how to live. Because one thing I don't know how to do is to live. I stand back from living. I think it's things that writers or creative people have to do if they're to examine what others are up to. So perhaps that's what I'm talking about. It's a choice of how to be.
I need nothing, I've everything I need. I walk along the dusty road, a donut in my hand. I spied a silver coffin, the lid was open wide. I wrapped my shirt right round my leg and lay down flat inside. I need nothing, I've everything I need. I lie upon a coffin, a donut in my hand.
I believe in bugs, I truly believe in bugs. If you come round to my restaurant at 4:30, you can see the little buggies walking round on the floor singing. I believe in bugs, I truly believe in bugs. See their happy faces as they swagger along, shaking at their tonsils as they belt out their song singing. I believe in bugs, I truly believe in bugs. When you squat down at the seaside for a snack on the beach, you can hear the buggies chortle as they jump out of reach. I believe in bugs, I truly believe in bugs. Lying in the silken ground one day, I shall sense the buggies wriggle as they eat me away, singing. I believe in bugs, I truly believe in bugs. I truly believe in bugs.
Cold potato. I was walking along the street in the heat at noontide, calling, cold potato! Cold potato! You see, I sell cold potatoes in the heat, and I sell hot potatoes in the winter time when it's cold. In this way, I can keep working all the year round. So I was calling, cold potato, cold potato. And the street was absolutely empty, and it was burning hot, and I was hoping that the potatoes would stay cold. I didn't used to carry many potatoes with me. I'd have, say, 3 or 4 potatoes in each pocket, embedded in ice chips, with a sponge in each, with a sponge to catch the drips, and people who wanted a cold potato would throw me down $1.40, and I would throw them up a cold potato. People round this part like cold potatoes, and I can't blame them, the heat they have here. Cold potatoes are very welcome. Suddenly, a window opens. It must have been a 12th-story flat. And a woman's head shouts out, hey, down there, cold potato man, I want a cold potato. I thought, a 12-story fling. However, I shouted down, right, you are, they're $1.40. And she threw down $1.40. And I threw up a cold potato. Well, it didn't get further than the 3rd story, and it came back down. The next time I threw it, it reached the 5th story, then the 8th, and at the end, it reached her story. By this time, every window in the street was filled with a grinning head. She grabs hold of the potato and she feels it. I can see her feeling it in her hands, and she shouts down, "Hey, this potato isn't cold. It's lukewarm." "Well," I shout up, "who told you to live in the 12th story?" "Naturally, it's lukewarm. Look at all the time I've spent trying to throw it up to you." "Here," she shouts, "take your lukewarm potato, I want my money back." And she lets the potato drop. I caught it deftly and put it back in my pocket to chill. With everybody watching and all the heads grinning, I knew I had to return her money, so I threw up her $1.40. It reached her first time. "Hey, cold potato man," she yells, "this $1.40's lukewarm." Everybody applauded. I dragged all the potatoes out of my pockets and threw them into the road. Then I jumped up and down on them for a while till I recovered my good spirits.
Many feet make one path. I like to walk on a footpath. I walk over the grass and turn to see if I have made a path. 2 feet once only is not enough. I return to the footpath to feel one of the bunch. I add my feet. I look back. What a path we made.
If you would like more information on the Church of the Subgenius, you could write to them at P.O. Box 181-417, Cleveland Heights, Ohio, 44118-1417, or visit them online at subgenius.com.
The best thing about being dead is that you no longer have to say, "I wish I were dead." The best thing about being alive is that you can still say, "I wish I were dead."
Oh, pellets rolling round my feet. Look at the girl with a broken nose laughing out the window. I keep a tiny corner shop and pellets is my stock. If you want a pellet, come to me, my pellets, soft as chalk. Oh, pellets rolling round my feet. Look at the girl with a broken nose laughing out the window. Some people force them in the mouth, young children up their nose, but pretty girls prefer to put their pellets where it shows. Oh, pellets rolling round my feet. Look at the girl with a broken nose laughing out the window. When children ask for pellets, I say, "Red, blue or green?" They reply, "It makes no difference, for when they swallow them, they won't be seen." Oh, pellets rolling round my feet. Look at the girl with a broken nose laughing out the window. So come to me for pellets to rub on or to eat. They'll make your fingers swell like man, your thumbs as brown as peat. Oh, pellets rolling round my feet. Look at the girl with a broken nose laughing out the window.
Can you afford to ignore this promo? Individually, each of us is buffeted by social tidal waves.
Generally powerless except to create peaceful temporary islands of slack with his or her own self, kin, or buddies.
But as one group, collectively acting and moving like one relentless hydra whose parts are not the same,
encircling the world in a monstrous belt of unpredictability,
the world's sub-genii will be immune to the false slack of the pink boys and shall overcome the conspiracy.
Our brains are too well-worn, too smudged, and too stained to be completely washed by their insidious
mind-cleaning techniques. We don't worry about the conspiracy driving us crazy because we already are crazy.
We don't worry about the new depression reducing us to barbarism.
Subgeniuses are barbarians.
We seek something better, something for nothing.
Something like Bob's Slacktime Funhouse every Saturday night at 1 a.m. right here on WREK Atlanta.